It is a difficult and emotional issue that they are dealing with.
North Korea detains a U.S. teacher. It's Monday, April 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online for Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China builds a new economic zone. Microsoft's founder concerned about government spending cuts. Visas for skilled foreign workers under review. Marching for science and growing use of Chinese medicine. All on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has detained another U.S. citizen, a university accounting professor in his 50s, in the country to teach and discuss relief activities. South Korea's Yonhap News Agency says Tony Kim, who also goes by his Korean name Kim Sang-duk, was arrested Friday at Pyongyang International Airport. Kim taught accounting at Pyongyang University of Science and Technology for about a month, according to the school's chancellor, Park Chan-mo. Kim had taught at Yanbian University of Science and Technology in China before teaching in North Korea. The U.S. State Department said protection of U.S. citizens is one of its highest priorities, but the United States has no diplomatic relations with North Korea and works with the Swedish embassy in Pyongyang to try to free detained Americans. The State Department would not comment further, and North Korea did not immediately comment on the arrest. Park said that he was told Kim's detention had nothing to do with his teaching in North Korea, but did not know further details about his detention. Kim is the third American held by the regime of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un at a time of tense relations with the United States. U.S. President Donald Trump has dispatched a naval strike group to the waters off the Korean Peninsula as a warning against Pyongyang's continued nuclear weapons development program. On Sunday, North Korea said it was ready to sink an aircraft carrier, the USS Carl Vinson, which is the lead ship in the U.S. Naval Strike Group, to demonstrate its military might. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said Saturday the naval ships would arrive off the Korean Peninsula within days. The North Korean government, in violation of U.N. decrees, has conducted numerous missile tests and five nuclear tests, with a sixth possible soon. Last year, Otto Warmbier, a University of Virginia student, was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor in prison after he confessed to trying to steal a propaganda banner. Kim Dong-chul, born a South Korean but believed to have U.S. citizenship, is serving 10 years of hard labor for subversion. The latest detention also comes as many families in South Korea are missing loved ones believed to have been abducted by North Korea over the years. From Seoul, VOA correspondent Brian Patton joins us with more on their efforts to find missing family members.
A group of representatives from abductee families appealed to the media in Seoul recently to help get their stories out there again, to help perhaps bring some media focus and pressure to the government in South Korea to do something to help them. They feel forsaken by their own government here. And it is a difficult and emotional issue that they are dealing with. Many of them have lost family members 60 years ago during the Korean War or shortly after. North Korea has, during the war, of course, they had lots of prisoners of war, and most of those were exchanged at the end of the war. But North Korea kept thousands of South Koreans that they thought would be useful in their rebuilding effort after the war. And in the decades after, abducted reportedly thousands more. Many, like 80%, were fishermen who they grabbed for intelligence purposes or for propaganda purposes to show, to kind of profile them as defectors into North Korea at some point. But what happened when these people are abducted, they are just lost to their families. There's no communications. The families don't know what happened to them. They don't know if they, if they are still alive or where they're living, if they ended up getting married. And they just, many of these family members have lived their whole lives just trying to find out what happened. And they feel they have been left out, and that their stories are in much in the media are just like old news. But their anguish, when you talk to them, is so real and still, like, so fresh to them that, you know, where are my parents? And many of these people, their parents, if they were taken, they're gone. They, you know, some of these people I spoke to, they're in their 60s and 70s. So they're, and they lost their parents, you know, 50 years ago. So their parents are gone. So they're not looking to bring their parents home. They're looking to find out what happened. What happened to them, and maybe get their remains shipped back. And there was one man who stood up in the room, and he made what seemed like an insane proposal. That, you know, he said, "I have a letter here, and I want to send it to President Trump, and I want President Trump to help. Is there anyone who represents the U.S. here who can help me send this to President Trump?" And many of us were like, "What? You think President Trump is going to get involved in this issue?" And it's easy to be cynical, and it's easy to kind of write off this kind of out of the ordinary request. But it does speak to the level of pain and frustration that these people are going through.
A heart-wrenching story, and we thank you, Brian Patton, our correspondent in Seoul, for bringing this to us.
Thank you, Jim.
Meanwhile, two Japanese destroyers have joined the USS Carl Vinson carrier strike group heading toward the Korean Peninsula. The vessels of the two countries began joint exercises Sunday in the Western Pacific. It was not immediately clear how long the Japanese destroyers will sail alongside the U.S. carrier group. The U.S. Navy says the joint exercises are routine, designed to improve combined maritime response and defense capabilities, as well as joint maneuvering proficiency. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Afghanistan in mourning after deadly Taliban assault on Afghan Army base. Vice President Pence says U.S. is confident China will press North Korea to drop nuclear program. Japanese ships join U.S. carrier en route to Korean Peninsula. Philippine troops kill suspected militant on resort island. In North Korea, drivers scramble to find gas. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. China's President Xi Jinping recently unveiled an ambitious plan to turn a massive landlocked area southwest of the capital into a modern and technologically advanced economic zone. If successful, some argue Xiong'an new area could become a high point of Xi's legacy. If not, it could be a costly mistake. VOA's Bill Ide recently visited the area and found that just as the grand plan is getting off the ground, there are already plenty of concerns.
Xiong'an will be about three times the size of New York City when finished. Authorities are still drafting a master plan for the backwater area, but the impact of the scheme is already being felt. Real estate prices surged after the project was announced earlier this month, and authorities quickly took the unprecedented step of shutting the market down completely. Not only are real estate sales banned, but construction has been halted as well. The fate of many existing large-scale communities is unclear. But local residents say the controls have gradually been tightening for months.
I finished building a 400-square-meter home last year and still can't move in. It is going to be torn down. Authorities haven't said anything yet, but they will definitely demolish it.
Last year, the rumors were already starting to fly. We don't know what's going on. At first, you couldn't plant crops, and now you can't build? This is not normal.
Some real estate analysts say authorities may make the ban on private building permanent, giving China's Communist Party-led government control of the area's housing market. Clearly, some will benefit from the influx of capital. Some analysts say the investment needed for the plan could boost China's annual economic growth by as much as 1%, a crucial boost at a time when the economy is slowing. Some local residents feel their interests are being tossed aside.
After hearing the plan, all I wanted to do is cry. I haven't been able to sleep or eat for days. I've worked half a lifetime, and now I have to throw it all away.
How authorities will address those concerns is unclear. For now, the focus is still largely on the bigger picture. China's north has long lagged behind the south as an economic driver and innovator in many sectors. And while officials hope the zone will become a new model for growth, some critics say that if the market is not allowed to have any sway, the state-led, top-down approach is likely to fail. Bill Ide, VOA News, Shong'an New Area, China.
Happening now in Asia, Australia has signaled it opposes resuming the search for the missing Malaysia Airlines MH370 aircraft, despite the nation's science agency saying fresh analysis makes it increasingly confident of the plane's location. Australia's transport minister says new analysis did not appear as new evidence. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. The founder of Microsoft, billionaire philanthropist Bill Gates, has given a passionate defense of foreign aid and voiced fears that the political climate in the United States and Britain could see aid budget cuts. In a speech in London this week, he warned that withdrawing aid would, in his words, create a leadership vacuum that others will fill. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Bill Gates gives $5 billion a year to development aid, making him one of the world's most generous philanthropists. In a speech at London's Royal United Services Institute this week, he voiced fears that the political tide is turning against foreign aid.
It concerns me that some world leaders are interpreting recent advances as reasons to turn inward instead of seeing them what they are. Problems that, although they're difficult and will take time, can be solved if we invest in the long-term solutions that are necessary.
The United States remains by far the world's biggest donor, funding long-term programs and emergency relief across the globe, such as this $1.8 million aid package sent to Peru following floods earlier this year. But U.S. President Donald Trump is proposing to cut the $43 billion foreign aid budget as part of efforts to reduce government debt. Gates argues many critics of foreign aid don't realize the huge progress that has been achieved.
If you could only pick one number to highlight the effectiveness of the development agenda since 1990, I would pick the number 122 million. That's the number of children's lives that have been saved.
He disputed the notion that funding foreign aid is a bottomless pit.
As you bring down that child to death rate, families choose to have less children. Population goes down very substantially, which brings within reach all of the things society is trying to do. Better health, better education, economic opportunity.
Bill Gates' speech in London comes as Britain gears up for a snap election in June. The UK is one of the few developed countries to meet the UN aid budget target of 0.7% of GDP. Current Prime Minister Theresa May has committed to keeping that pledge, but many in her party want aid money diverted to the military. Gates said he wanted to make the case for the facts.
When aid is mismanaged, it is a double crime, stealing both from the taxpayer and the poor. But let's be clear, the bulk of this aid is getting to its recipients and having an incredible effect. There'll always be a need to adjust. We're working in very tough countries, and so you'll never get 100% perfect effectiveness. But you can learn, and every year, the aid is better spent.
Aid agencies say the debate couldn't come at a worse time, with around 65 million refugees around the world, worsening conflicts in the Middle East and famine striking East Africa. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, India is making the longest poem ever written into its most expensive film ever. Rhonda Musum is based on the Sanskrit epic The Mahabharata. The film's $155 million budget compares to $25 million for most movies from India. A two-part film expected to be out in 2020. Stay up to date all day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order directing government agencies to review their use of the H-1B visa program that enables U.S. companies to hire temporary foreign workers. Critics say the program has been used to hire cheaper labor from abroad at the expense of the American workforce, but proponents say it is a necessary measure to fill high-tech jobs that are crucial to the American economy. Trump signed the order last week, saying it's part of his drive to rebuild the U.S. economy, Slotika Hoke reports.
Under Trump's new order, government agencies are required to review their procurement practices and ensure that exceptions to the Buy American rules are not abused.
With this order, I'm directing every single agency in our government to strictly uphold our Buy American laws, to minimize the use of waivers, and to maximize Made in America content in all federal projects.
Trump told an audience in a tool-making factory in Wisconsin that widespread abuse of the U.S. immigration system enables employers to replace American workers of all backgrounds with cheaper labor brought in from other countries.
American workers have long called for reforms to end these visa abuses, and today their calls are being answered for the first time. That includes taking the first steps to set in motion a long-overdue reform of H-1B visas.
H-1B visas are designed to help employers bring in foreign workers with skills that are scarce in the United States. The intent is good, political science professor Ronil Hira told VOA.
The idea is that you're filling skills gaps. So when there are shortages of American workers, and you're going to bring in a very specialized foreign worker to fill those gaps.
It is supposed to be a temporary measure, but the program has not been used to bring only the best and most talented workers, says Hira.
It's become a way for employers to bring in cheaper indentured workers as opposed to filling those skills gaps. And so as a result, the program is oversubscribed and it's actually undercutting Americans. So in this case, Trump is absolutely right.
Hira says a stricter enforcement of the rules could free up a number of these temporary visas for companies that really need specialists with rare skills. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a 7-year-old boy in the eastern Chinese city of Suzhou miraculously survived a 10-story fall from a building after using an umbrella as a parachute, according to local media. The boy was believed to have been trying to imitate a cartoon character he had been watching on television. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Marches took place in hundreds of cities around the world Saturday in support of science. Organizers hope to bring government attention to fact-based decisions on health, the environment, safety, and the economy. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti brings us this unscientific poll of the gathering here in Washington.
This was probably the most intelligent march ever. Most everyone was a scientist, a nerd, and proud of it.
This is about the pace of science, but it all leads somewhere.
Jim and Sam left their jobs at Michigan State University and flew to Washington with one message: science matters.
And if we don't realize the importance of this and continue this investment, everything that made us great again, it's going to go away.
From Germany to Taiwan to Australia, this global event electrified science enthusiasts. They rallied for government budgeting based on facts.
I came along because I believe in evidence-based research.
Here in the U.S., Griffin Adams is a future scientist.
Well, if they don't look at facts, then science won't be science anymore and people will be confused.
I'm also a six-year veteran of EPA.
The U.S. budget chief has said environmental agencies, medical research, and other departments will face cuts.
Regarding the question as to climate change, I think the president was fairly straightforward. Is that we're not spending money on that anymore.
In a tweet during the science march, President Donald Trump said, "We stand committed to preserving the natural beauty of our nation."
Nerds can do anything if we work together.
Some critics say this type of activism politicizes science in a field where most don't communicate their achievements. Jim Deering says matter doesn't stand still.
They've done their work and they haven't had to become very political in terms of funding allocations. But I really do feel like that time has passed.
I don't think this is a political thing. I think it's just more of a statement of we need science out there.
So what happens next when all these marchers leave and the politicians return to their jobs? Organizers hope they carry this excitement back to their hometown. And as for Washington, there's another march for climate change next weekend. Carolyn Frasutti, VOA News, Washington.
There's still plenty of room for scientific research on traditional Chinese medicines like acupuncture, and whether they work or not, they're gaining fans outside of China. And there's some scientific evidence to support the idea that natural compounds in flower and bark teas can actually have a restorative effect. They work in the same way as aspirin, which is a natural compound found in the bark of the willow tree. But with popularity of Chinese herbal medicine on the rise, there is also a higher chance of fraud and increasing pressure on the plants in the wild. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
The seeds of the quince plant are used in Chinese medicine to combat a variety of illnesses, ranging from poor digestion to cough. And the bark and flower buds from the magnolia are used to treat depression and asthma. Harvesting and selling these products has become big business. But according to researchers, the market is full of potentially second-rate merchandise.
The names of these entities tend to be very variable. Therefore, it's very difficult to track exactly which species is being traded.
That's why scientists in England have created a reference book to help doctors who are thinking about incorporating traditional medicine into their practice. Western doctors are learning more and more about how these therapies work, but they're not as good at gauging the quality of the raw materials they are prescribing.
This is one of the main reasons that we wrote our book, to try to highlight the particular Chinese medicines that are now becoming quite scarce in the wild and are either being replaced by cheap lookalikes or something else that perhaps is less effective.
This isn't such a big problem in China, where doctors have a long history of working with traditional medicines. But in the West, how do you tell one plant from the next?
A lot of money also has been invested in how they work and how best can we improve perhaps the quality or the application of them. But there's been very little investment in checking, are they actually the correct species?
Case in point, the fritillaria, the bulb of this lily plant, is used to treat coughs and bronchitis. But for someone without the background, it's hard to tell the real thing from the knockoff.
They're very well-established medicines in this medical system. They're so effective that the demand for them, sadly, is now so high that many cheaper look-alike substitutes are being used.
Leon hopes their reference will become the definitive textbook for Western doctors who want to move towards natural remedies. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
We prescribe taking VOA Asia once a day to get a healthy dose of news and information. You can get our program in a variety of ways, including iTunes and SoundCloud. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can download our podcast as well from voanews.com and take our program wherever you go. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Aydin Utku, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Steve Miller and Ali Ogden, our interns as well, Anying Guo, Michelle Cheatham, and Sandra Young. Thank you so much. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.